brought to you by Burr Foreman and broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Results Matter Radio, where we bring you pertinent business information and offer real-life solutions to help drive desired results for you, whatever your business may be.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Results Matter Radio, and a big thank you to our sponsor, Burr and Foreman. Stone, another great episode. We got a room full of some of the big movers and shakers here in Atlanta again.
We most certainly do. We have a studio full this morning. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to hear from Connie Brown and Bill Mulcahy. They are with the Institute of Internal Auditors. But first up on Results Matter this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce Mr. Brian Byers and Charles Hines. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So, Charles, how about giving us a little bit of an overview, mission and purpose of Forum 400? What's this thing all about?
Sure. The financial industry is full of various associations, and I've been a member and a board member and a president of many of these organizations, but I've never seen an organization like the International Forum 400. They have a annual meeting once a year, and they also have a study group meeting. But what makes them really unique is they are the very top of the organization, and they really share with each other.
And what is the group that they're serving?
In order to be a member of this organization, you have to be able to produce $500,000 of personal services for individuals. And they serve this group to be able to educate them and let them know what is going on in the country.
And why is it named Forum 400? Is it practitioners up and down the 400 corridor? Or?
Exactly. No. It's great. We are limited to 400 members. Ah. So we're really trying to be able to select just the very best.
And then, so you've been a member for how long?
I've been a member since 2006.
Mm-hmm. And the group's been around?
Since, I think 35, 40 years.
Oh, so it's been around a while?
It sure has been.
And then what was the impetus, do you know, to start the group?
The impetus was exactly that, is that for people to be able to share ideas. And uh-huh. That's what's really unique about it. Not only do you have to be extremely successful, but you've got to be willing to share your ideas. And those two oftentimes don't meet together. But for these 400 people, it does.
So this is not a group of people, as we sometimes see in some organizations, of all trying to sell each other something. You guys are genuinely trying to collaborate, explore best practices, and I don't know, do you guys refer business to each other and sometimes collaborate on projects? Or?
We do it sometimes, but it's not that common. We have a relationship with our clients that we're very comfortable with, and we don't really feel competitive between each other.
And the purpose of the group is to share best practices and educate each other about it's more of an educational component.
Absolutely, it is. But in addition to that, which is sort of unique about this organization, because a lot of them do that, is that we have a sharing of ideas that we'll also look at a particular idea, no barred holes, so we'll be able to have something come up that may be a controversial topic that a lot of associations try to avoid, and we want to delve into it, find out what's wrong with it, what's right with it, and make the individual decide what's best.
Now, this group, can anybody be, like you said, that's limited to only the top 400? Who decides how you get in, or is it difficult to get in?
It's all on Bill. He decides everything. You better be nice to Bill.
Right. It's by invitation only to be able to become a member. First, you have to be able to prove that you're successful, so we actually want documentation to make sure.
Right, so they don't take the word of the person. You have to prove it.
Right. And that once we do that, just because you have that is not enough to be able to get in the organization. We also need to be able to have somebody contact you or find out about you and make sure that you're willing to share and you don't feel the competitive pressure that many people have in this organization, in this industry.
Now, Brian Byers is here as well. Brian, you're a relatively new member.
I'm a brand new member.
Now, I heard that you're one of the 40 under 40, right?
I am, for Georgia Trend Magazine.
Now, is that what got you in the group, you think?
I've worked with one of the forum members for several years now, and he's one of my business mentors, Raul Garuda. And Raul Garuda is known nationally for his work and very, very respected. And so he really said he had an appreciation for my work ethic, and that's what drove him to nominate me. And I can concur with Charles's saying that the forum can give TSA a run for their money on their background. So, but you know, it's more than it's like Charles was saying. It's more than just success. It's you're going to share your ideas, and you're going to share what's working for you in your practice. What are you doing good for your clients? What's being positive? Trying to stay ahead of that cutting edge. And that's, I've been invited to be part of a lot of different associations, and I usually decline just because of shortness of time. And if you join every association you're approached, you generally don't have time to even practice. And the forum is so unique because when you go to a lot of conferences, it seems like people have to pull information from each other and ask sneaky
questions. They're more guarded about sharing.
Yeah, it's almost
sharing.
Like, it's like being a defense attorney when you go to these conferences. And so when you're part of the forum, it's you know, people are just driving ideas down your throat, and they're sharing stuff, and it's open. And not only here's an idea, but here is a you know, here's a copy of it, and here's the material that I used. And it's such an open forum. And the idea behind it is, I think, truly this too, or my idea behind it is this, is that, you know, me and Charles both work in the Atlanta metro area.
Right.
And so in theory, I guess we're kind of competitors. But the reality is this, is that we're competing at a level that our competition doesn't even know exists. Mm-hmm. And so there's so many people for us to work with and service and help, that I don't look at Charles as my competition. I look at him like I want to learn from him, and I hope there's things that I can share with him. We have our study group next month. I'm a little intimidated because when I attended some conferences with him, you know, people would part the hallways as he would walk in. And so now I'm going to a meeting where Raul's just a regular guy in the room. So, but everybody spends, you know, 45 minutes presenting an idea to the group and sharing that. And you go to social events and your network. And it's an awesome opportunity. And people should really ask their advisors they're working with, are they part of the Forum 400? You know, and although they allow 400 members, they only have 280 that's made the cut so far.
Oh, wow. So yeah. There's still an opportunity to be part of the group, but it's just difficult to find the people that meet the criteria.
Absolutely.
So what was that very first meeting like? Was it intimidating at all, or do they have some sort of onboarding acclimation process?
They're hazing.
Charles said there's an initiation fee, so I don't know. He's just paid in cash. But I haven't attended the first meeting. I know several advisors that are part of the forum, and you know, they're the best of the best throughout the whole country. And I mean, and I'm, you know, this is one of the biggest honors I think I've ever had in my 18 years career, is being part of this group. And I'm excited. I haven't attended an event yet. I'm a little nervous about it. We'll see how it works out. So if you read in the paper, I got thrown out of the forum, you know what happened. So,
well, I like the Carfax angle. You know, if you're not part of the Forum 400, then maybe you're really not the caliber of financial advisor that I need. Right.
Well, I think you know, being part of the Forum 400, I believe it shows that you're truly committed to excellence. That, you know, it's not only Charles is going to spend time working with his clients to make sure that they're in the best possible position and their family is, but he's also committed to raising the bar of the whole industry. So he's not just trying to keep the secret sauce to himself. He wants to take the people that are serious about what they do for a living and raising that bar. And that's why I'm such an honor to be part of it.
So when you found out that you were accepted in the group, was that like high fives around the office?
I did some cartwheels and we did some things like that. And so we were very excited about it. It was a humbling thing. It's a several month process, and you go through, you know, you submit an original application. You do have to submit some financial information. Mm-hmm. You know, you go through several interviews of existing members that talk to you about kind of, you know, what you want to accomplish. And so when you finally get that email and that call saying, okay, you've been approved. Yeah, it's a very nice feeling. Yeah.
Now, Charles, is this when this meeting rolls around, is this a meeting that you're looking forward to attending? Because you mentioned earlier that, you know, you've been a member and probably former member of dozens of associations throughout the years. You know, some of them you're like, oh, great. You know, it's the third Tuesday of the month. You know, I got to go over this, and you're not looking forward to it. Is this a meeting that you're looking forward to?
Absolutely. Every year. It's in January is when the annual meeting is, mm-hmm. and I sign up for it when it first comes on out, and plan on being a member of it for a long period of time.
And then what's the average age of, not the average age, but
how old are you, Charles?
Like how much experience does your members have on average about? These aren't rookies, right? You know, you're not going to get to the level you're at, you know, in the first year or so.
Correct. And we're talking about, you know, how do we treat the first person who comes on in or a new member who comes on in? By the time you go through this level, the type of person who comes in here is not going to be intimidated. Mm-hmm. We have, and everybody in there is not intimidated, so they're willing to be able to ask the very difficult questions. And for the speakers who come in or for the people who are presenting, they got to be prepared that they aren't going to be very nice to them necessarily. They're going to be able to ask them the very difficult questions.
I'm leaving.
So can you walk us through what that meeting looks like? Is it a bunch of speakers and everybody just sits there, or is it you break out into groups? How does it work?
Yep. The meeting is very similar to many meetings where in the mornings that you have a main platform meeting and then you break out into breakout sessions. Where the difference comes is when after each of the meetings or after each of the speakers, there's a time to be able to ask questions. And with this group of folks who are very busy folks, just like Byron was talking about, was that they want to, since they're very busy, they ask very good questions, and they aren't willing to just be able to go off on some tangent. They want to be able to have their questions answered and everybody's attentive.
So are there a lot of changes in your arena recently? Has legislation caused some changes?
Probably in your world, there's not a lot of changes.
No, everything's just like it was back in 1890.
Simpler that way.
Right. There's an incredible amount of change going on, and that's one of the reasons for these meetings. As you know, the financial industry is all sort of merging together where banks do a lot of stuff that the financial industry does, insurance folks do it, so it's all sort of merging. And to be able to understand what's going on, and with the tax laws continuing to change at the same time, there's always new ideas that are coming out. And it's very easy oftentimes to hear about these new ideas and what's good about them. What's oftentimes difficult is to hear what's wrong with them. Mm-hmm. And be able to understand that from somebody who's not trying to sell it to you as a wholesaler, but trying to make it work.
Now, in your industry, how important is to surround yourself with other trusted advisors that you trust in a way that you can help your clients out by giving them kind of that access to those?
I think being the younger guy in the room, no offense, but I think I can probably ask this a little better. Just because Charles has more years in this than I do, it's imperative. You know, if you're really committed, there's two different ways of looking at this. You have salespeople and you have advisors, mm-hmm. and you need to know what the difference are. And so when you have a salesperson, they're there to push you a product. That's all they're there for. It's just a transaction. An advisor is going to sit there and give you the guidance. And it just takes a lot of knowledge. It takes a lot of, you know, there's a lot of things that we discuss and we go through with our clientele that's not necessarily in textbooks. You can't go get a degree in. A lot of it is school of hard knocks or sitting down and getting on the phone or going through these transactions with previous clients or working with tax attorneys and exposing yourself around the best and brightest professionals. And that's what, for me, that's what I think set me apart from a lot of other advisors that I started with, was the commitment to that of surrounding yourself around the best and brightest possible.
So you guys hang out with lawyers and other professional service providers that can help your clients. You're kind of quarterbacking a whole team, I guess, yeah?
That's a great way to respond to it, because recently we were working with a business that was being able to pass it down to the next generation. And during this whole 1 year process, we had a number of attorneys, we had an accountant, we had a local accountant who was also there. We also had a professional psychiatrist who was talking about going from dad down to the kids and the things that were going on. So yes, it's definitely important. And it's what a great experience it is, though, when you deal in that level. After about a year of doing this, we came in, we're signing the final papers, and son and daughter come on out with a bottle of champagne and flowers for mom and dad, and included all of us and said, thank you so much for making this happen. So it's really a great experience.
So tell us more about your practice. I want to hear more about what your practice focuses on now that you're out of the ketchup business.
That's right. It's spelled exactly the same way. And oddly enough, I'm 57 years old, too.
That's great.
The the business, my business, I guess, really we focused on generational planning. And in the 4-in-400, there's a lot of different focuses that people have in different areas. And that's really what we've done. And there's, you know, very few businesses are able to go from one generation down to the third generation. And with proper planning, that can be done.
Now, that's kind of unique to America because we haven't been around that long. But in Europe, there's it's not as unusual, right? They have vineyards that have been around 500 years, right?
Right. And you said, are things changing? Yes. You know, we are now in a position where the greatest generation lived has built up some nice businesses. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we can keep them alive for future generations.
What percentage of businesses are family-owned, multi-generational businesses? Is it, it's a small percent or a larger than you would think percent?
It's a larger percent have people coming into it, and mm-hmm. it's and I don't know that number exactly.
Mm-hmm. But a lot more wealth, I think, is within these family-owned businesses than the average Joe would recognize, right? And sometimes it's the quiet guy down the street who is a second-generation lumberyard owner. And nobody knows that he's a gazillionaire, right?
Right.
But don't they have a lot of unique challenges? I mean, you've been involved in some interviews on
family business. Like, a family business is different than a typical corporation because you have the family politics of this, right? And the you have sibling issues and succession issues. There are some unique challenges, right?
Oh, great question. You know, if somebody has three kids and two kids are in the business.
And one isn't.
How do you treat them fairly
right.
And equally?
I guess that's why you needed to bring that therapist in there, right?
You're absolutely right.
You know, I started season two of Arrested Development on
right.
Netflix. That's about a family business with a few challenges that would probably profit quite handsomely from some intervention from a psychiatrist. So, sure. Brian, I want to hear a little bit about your business. Do you have a focus? Do you have a sweet spot?
We do. I think our focus really gets into asset protection. We do a lot of elder care planning. We do a lot of asset protection. We also do some for some business owners. Our primary focus is not as business owners as much as Charles is, but we do have some clients that we have to participate in those sort of transactions, and it certainly can be a challenge, and you have to really think outside the box. But and we also, especially with baby boomers, we've been focusing on a lot of trying to provide lifetime income for our clients because they have a lot of concerns about the uncertainties that are in the market. They have a lot of uncertainties about what's going on in their investments. Will they be able to retire now? Will they be able to stay in retirement? Is a huge concern. So that's one of our primary focuses.
So what was it like? You mentioned you're younger than other people in this room.
Well,
I don't want to name names, including me. But how do you have those conversations with older people that are nearing retirement when you're so much younger than them?
Well, I'm 40, and so I'm not terribly younger than them. But ultimately, I think it starts with a very open discussion and asking them, you know, what do they want? At the end of the day, I was talking to another colleague of mine, and he was saying, he said, you know, what you do is so complicated. I just don't get it. And I said, it's really not that hard. And we were meeting at Chick-fil-A, and I was having a cup of coffee. And I said, do you know the difference between me and the cashier? And he said, no. And I said, nothing. I went up and I asked them, I would like a cup of coffee. And he handed me a cup of coffee and I paid for it and I walked away. And we're both happy in the transaction.
Right.
So I said, God gave you two ears and one mouth for a reason. And I think as an advisor, you have to stick to that principle and you have to listen more than you talk. And a lot of times people will tell you what they want to achieve. It's up to the advisor to have the knowledge or have the resources to go gain to provide what they want. So if they want to transition a business from one generation to the next, you need to sit and listen to their problems or what do they envision? What are their hopes and dreams? So a lot of times when we have our first meetings with our clients, they're just kind of sharing with us is like, this is what I envision for the next 30 years. And so it's up to us to go paint the picture and create it.
You both exude credibility and sincerity, and it's clear that you're good at what you do and you have access to resources to complement your efforts. And I got to wonder, how do you even get to have that initial conversation? Because it seems to me like it's a pretty crowded arena. It would be a heck of a lot more difficult to sell what you're selling than, I mean, I got to be honest with you, getting a company to underwrite a radio show is not a terribly difficult sale. I mean, how do you even get to have that first conversation?
Well, for us, about 95% or more of our business is all referral based. Mm-hmm. And so in what we do, and we have a core business principle that our company works off of, and it's very simple, is that everything that we function and everything that we do, we want to do it at a higher level that other people doesn't even know exist. Meaning that in customer service, you know, we have a system set up where calls are answered after hours. We do evening appointments. We do weekend appointments. We do house calls. We do visits in our office. We go above and beyond everything we humanly can to make it easy for our clients. And so we hope by doing that, and in the last 18 years, I've never had a down year, is that they feel comfortable realizing that everything we've ever said we're going to do, we perform and we provide. And I think that's what continues to build that level of credibility with me and the other advisors I work with within my organization. But we pretty much just get referred by other professionals and other clients.
It's that hard work theme cropping up again. Yeah. I've asked that question on air before, and the really successful people say stuff about working hard and being good.
Right.
that whole doing good work is a good sales tool, isn't it? Right.
And Byron is absolutely correct as far as being able to work hard and be able to build trust and to be able to understand what somebody's asking. And I think that's what really is unique. And what Brian did not mention as far as the Chick-fil-A person goes, it was real easy for that Chick-fil-A person to be able to understand what he wanted. I want a cup of coffee. It's much more difficult when you're dealing with a prospect that really doesn't oftentimes understand really what they want as well and be able to communicate it. And the Forum 400 folks are just incredible as I meet with them and connect with them at being able to really understand people and understand what they want, and also a trust factor where they're going to try to do the right thing regardless of whether it's the best thing for them necessarily or what they could do for what's in the client. They have a real love for the client at the same time. And that's what sort of separates this group apart.
And I would like to add to what Charles said was he's 100% accurate is that it's sometimes you are very lucky and you do have someone come in and they know exactly what they want to accomplish. A lot of times just through knowledge and good networking and surrounding yourself by the best and the brightest is that you know what questions to ask.
Right, because the client doesn't, they don't know what they don't know. You know, that's why they're working with you, because you're supposed to be the expert and you're supposed to be kind of steering them and watching their back and helping them achieve whatever objective they're trying to achieve.
Sure.
Actually, that's worth diving into a little bit, because I wouldn't have the first clue about what questions to ask. What are some disciplines and maybe some questions to ask if someone is considering engaging a financial advisor? What should we be looking for so that we get somebody that's going to really serve us?
I think a great place to start is just by asking around and, you know, asking other people, you know, who do you work with and what kind of experiences have you been having, and seeing, you know, that's a huge and a great place to start is just a referral. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously check them out, and I would do the Better Business Bureau and make sure they don't have any complaints. And I would check, you know, whatever regulatory agency oversees them. And
I just look at the Form 400.
Yeah, if they're not the Form 400, they don't even make the cut, right?
and I think that's the important part is when you're sitting down interviewing and asking them, what do you do to educate yourself? I mean, it's great if they went to Harvard 30 years ago, but what have they done since then? And like Charles was saying, this industry is changing constantly. And if you're starting to look at legal issues and tax issues and every other kind of issue that's going to pose some sort of challenge as you're trying to financially prepare yourself, you need to have someone that's not just in tune, but ahead of that curve and constantly looking for those things.
And maybe ask them about that quarterback thing we were talking about. Who is in your circle, in your network that we can bring in? Because maybe I do want to hand this down to a generation, or I want to do some other stuff that's outside your immediate purview.
Yeah, the financial industry is somewhat like what's going on with doctors now. You know, when you go to a doctor, you go to a specialist here, a specialist here, a specialist there. And there's a great need for people like us who sort of understand the overall picture to be able to quarterback it and to be able to understand those issues and who to pull in and who you need and who you need help with.
So I got to ask you both. I'll start with you, Charles. What are you reading these days? What's on the nightstand? Anything that our folks should know about, or is that your escape and you go to fiction?
That's a great question, and I do a lot of reading of periodicals, and really with the Forum 400 and the newsletters that come on out and what's right. coming up is where I sort of keep up with what's going on in the industry. I'm not reading as much of the self-help books
right.
As many folks may.
Brian, you got a recommendation on any kind of business-related book that you're...
Well, I was going to say 50 Shades of Gray, but I don't know if that's appropriate or not. But But, you know, I also try to read a lot of industry related books. One book that I really enjoyed a lot was, and it wasn't industry related, but it was Andy Andrews, The Traveler's Gift. And it's something that I share with a lot of my clients because it's important for, you know, for me, it's important for me to make sure financially that my clients are prepared, but also, you know, I want to make sure that they're enjoying the quality of their retirement too. And talking about sharing it with family and, you know, enjoying those memories. I've had so many clients. I had one that was a wonderful client of mine up in Cartersville and never really seen his kids, had five daughters, just kind of stayed at home. A lot of times I'd have to plan meetings at 12 o'clock because he didn't like to turn his lights on. He was so tight. True story. And so he passed away. And when he passed away and we were getting his estate settled up, you know, his kids barely knew him. I've never met him before. I got to spend some time with him during the funeral and after, getting some things settled up. And I was just really shocked. But the main thing they wanted besides his money was his time. And I think it's important to, you know, like Charles was saying, it's not just sitting down with an attorney and planning these transactions or a CPA or an accountant. A lot of times it's just sitting down, just trying to reiterate what some huge qualities of life are and maybe show people how to enjoy their money a little bit more and make some wise decisions.
What fantastic wisdom to land on. It's been an absolute delight having you both in the studio. We got to have you back or maybe have some other folks from the Forum 400 if they're as articulate and insightful as you guys. That would be fun to have some folks back sometime.
Well, thank you.
We're the only two in Atlanta, and there's six in Georgia.
But we would love to come back.
Yeah.
All right. So let's make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you individually if they'd like to have a substantive conversation with you with matters pertaining to your practice and how you might serve them. And let's make sure that they know how to reach out and find out more about Forum 400. So we'll start with you, Brian.
Well, Charles's cell phone number is...
Oops.
Now, our company is Advanced Retirement Planning. We've got offices throughout Atlanta. And like I said, we also do house calls and calls, and we do visits in offices. You can reach us at 770-898-0300. Again, 770-898-0300. Or our website is arpllc.com, or you can also go to advancedretirementplan.com.
Fantastic. And Charles?
Yeah, I'm a big believer in the new technology, and the easiest way to be able to get in touch with me is just to type in Hines, like the ketchup bottle. Look at your ketchup bottle, and then put in Atlanta in there, and you'll see Hines and Associates pop up. We've been in Atlanta for over 50 years, and it'll be pretty easy to be able to find us. And I also think as far as the Forum 400 goes, that's probably the easiest way to find the Forum 400 is just go to the internet, put in Forum 400, all one word, and you'll have their website come up and find out all the information you want to on the internet.
So if you're a practitioner that is interested, they can learn how to apply? Is that...
Yes, on the website they'll tell you how to apply, and their home office is in Chicago, and there'll be all the information right there.
Well, gentlemen, again, thank you both for joining us. This has been a very informative conversation.
And, thank you.
And quite sincere. I think it makes a lot of sense to have you guys come back sometime.
Thank you.
All
right. Next up on Results Matter, we have the good folks from the Atlanta chapter of the Institute of Internal Auditors. Say that five times real fast, Lee. That could be fun. And Connie Brown, you're with us. You were very patient and polite during that last segment. It looked like you might have even taken a few notes. Did you learn anything from that conversation?
I absolutely did. I had no idea. So walking away with some good information. Thank you for that.
Fantastic. So we have Connie Brown, and we also have Bill Mulcahy. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
I know we've only known each other for like 10 or 15 minutes, but I can call you Bill instead of William, right?
You may. That's what most people do.
So give us a little bit of an overview, if you will. Bill, mission, purpose of this outfit of yours, this internal auditor crowd.
Well, what we do in the Institute of Internal Auditors Atlanta chapter is we try to, and we do, deliver to our members specific training for internal auditors. And in the past, what we've done is we've had a regional conference here where we got out almost 700 people from internal auditors in the area and had keynote speakers that came in and presented to our members. What's really important to our members is that they be a certified internal auditor, and yes, those initials are CIA, just in case you're wondering.
And that always looks good on a business card.
Absolutely.
Right?
It does.
We're out of here.
It gets us in the door.
And by doing things like becoming a certified in your field, it raises your game both within the profession and within the city.
Brian keeps cringing every time you use the word auditor.
Audit, now CIA. You really
he's halfway out the door.
It's hot.
So now you guys have an event coming up, is that right?
We do.
And this is an annual event?
This is our marquee event, actually. It is we call it the Atlanta Conference, and we're good on acronyms, so we call it TAC, T-A-C. The Atlanta Conference 2013 is our, as I said, our premier annual event. It's scheduled to take place on Friday, September the 13th, 2013, at the Cobb Galleria. This is our eighth year actually putting the conference on. Last year we had a record number attendance. We were close to 500 internal auditors and interested individuals.
How many internal auditors are there in Atlanta?
There are a lot. Our Atlanta chapter has over 1,900 members.
Wow.
So just in the greater Atlanta area, we've got 1,900 members, and we're really proud of that.
So is that large compared to other cities?
Actually, it is. Here in Georgia, we actually have four other chapters, and we actually are the largest one in Georgia. Mm-hmm. So 1,900 is pretty large, but there are a lot more internal auditors than that in the city.
So if I'm an internal auditor, and I'm not, but let's just play along with me for a moment. What are the compelling reasons? Why do I want to be a part of this group?
Well, as Bill mentioned, our mission here is to promote and develop interest in the internal audit group. In terms of why you want to be a part of it, I'm probably prejudiced because I've been an internal auditor probably for over 20 years now. I love it. I'm passionate about the profession, and I want to encourage other people to be just as passionate and just as interested in it. The role of the internal auditor is changing every day, and I know a couple of you cringed when you heard the word audit. I can't imagine why you would. You look at me and Bill. We're harmless.
You look harmless.
I think they're hiding something.
If you have an acronym that says IRS, I'm out of here with Brian.
No. But it's exciting because the internal audit profession is probably one of the few areas in a company where we have access to just about every part of the organization. So we get to see a little bit of everything. So it allows us to, it allows us to be advocates for stakeholders. It allows us to be problem solvers. It allows us to
And the rules change constantly, right? I mean, you guys have to stay up to speed all the time. As a business owner, and to my knowledge, we don't have an internal auditor unless that's Karen. But yeah.
Absolutely. And but that's why you want to be a member of the Institute of Internal Auditors. And I know that was a mouthful, but we just say the IIA. But one of the things our organization provides is a forum whereby interested members can get together and talk about the things that they're seeing and experiencing and how they're adjusting. How they're handling those different situations. So a big part of what we do is bring people together so that they can exchange these ideas and talk about what's going on. So that's why we're really proud of the Atlanta Conference. Like I said, it's our annual event. We're probably going to have 500-plus people there.
Wow.
In addition to sponsors, we've got, and Bill can talk more about some of the keynote speakers that we have, but we've got a great program lined up with some great topics.
Is this an opportunity for the auditors to get continuing education credits?
It is an opportunity for us to get continuing education credits.
And that's important,
credits.
Right?
It's very important. As a certified internal auditor, as Bill mentioned before, we need 40 CPE hours, and this is a way to provide good quality, cost-effective training in the local market. You don't have to go to another state. You've got it right here in Atlanta, and that's what we try and do every year. In addition to the Atlanta Conference, we do monthly meetings as well, and we offer 3 CPE credit hours there. So we try really hard to keep our hands on the pulse of the members to understand what it is they want to talk about. And one of the things that our group does is we go out to practitioners, service providers, and we bring these people together, and they present different topics on a monthly basis.
What I found so important about joining the Institute of Internal Auditors Atlanta chapter is when I left Arthur Anderson in their good days, I should add, some 17 years before they crashed and burned, by the way. But when I was there, everybody in the building talked audits all the time. That was our business. And when I moved to Emory University, there were 22,000 employees, and only 8 were in the internal audit department. And I found it very important to network with the others that are in internal auditing. So now one of the things we've done in the Atlanta chapter is we've put together a chief audit executives roundtable that is the Fortune 500 companies. So when you start networking with the likes of the Home Depot, Coca-Cola Enterprises, SunTrust, UPS, AGCO, Mohawk Industries, NCR.
Right.
These Can are
the
I continue?
Biggest, the biggest companies in yeah. Georgia.
So right. when all these people are participating with us, that gives the sign to everybody else in the market that this is the organization to belong to. If the internal auditors of these organizations
are right. not only just members, like a lot of times big companies throw, you know, some money behind it, but they don't really get it involved. And in this case, obviously, they're getting involved at a very high level.
So, for example, at our the Atlanta conference that we mentioned, September 13th at the Cup
right.
Galleria, we have speaking on what they're doing in internal auditing. We have Kiko Harvey, who's the chief auditor for Delta Airlines. We have Kelly Barrett, who's the chief auditor at the Home Depot. We have Mo Azam, the chief auditor of UPS, and we have Robin Moore, the chief auditor of the Coca-Cola Company. When you put together that kind of list in this town as to who's participating with us, that's the who's who.
Right, and not only this town, I'm sure around the country there'd be people lining up to.
And they're not just buying a banner. Right? They're not just buying a banner to hang in the back or sponsoring their coffee. These people are emotionally and physically committed to being there and contributing to the process.
Absolutely.
That's key.
And for the first time in the 65-year history of the IIA Atlanta chapter, one of our own is now the global IIA chairman, the top internal auditor in the world, and that's Paul Sobel, the chief audit executive here at Georgia Pacific. Paul's a wonderful person. He's written about 3 or 4 books. He lectures worldwide and still holds down a full-time job. Obviously, we're very proud of him.
So tell us a little bit about the day-to-day life of an internal auditor and a large, complex organization like this. What is that world like? What kind of challenges are they faced with?
Things that the auditors look at would include the accounting of the organization they work for, the auditing of the organization, and the governance. On each of those subjects, like accounting, many of us are, in addition to being certified internal auditors, are also certified public accountants and came up through that arena. In the auditing, we're auditing experts, and yes, we look at financial matters. Sometimes fraudulent matters come to our attention, but we look for the documentation to support what someone says they did as far and what they're going to do. And the other thing that's very important is from a governance standpoint, at many organizations, there's only 2 people that report to the board. One is the CEO, and the other one is the chief auditor. Mm-hmm. Chief auditors, in a governance standpoint, have the voice, the ear, the ability organization-wide to report to the board what the auditor's opinion is. That may be different than what the CEO's opinion is. It may be different than what the cabinet's position or senior staff, but it is the I don't know, right obligation and honor to have that voice with the board of directors from an audit standpoint.
That's a lot of power and responsibility, and it's reminding me of the phone call from Karen wanting to know why the boat gas was charged on the company
that's
card.
Right.
But I cleaned all that up for anybody that's listening that may have initials behind their name.
Well, Karen, we'll be here after the show if you need us to take a look.
I was talking recently at our international conference with the auditor for Tiffany's. You may have seen Tiffany's in the paper recently.
Not a good way.
Someone was taking some of the samples and thought that they were free samples and were taking them home with her. She's now going to face some criminal charges for taking those things. But yeah, do people give auditors the reputation that we're chasing paper clips? Well, yeah, maybe we do sometimes, but also chase the diamonds.
But even for smaller organizations like ours, we want to be positioned at some point perhaps to be acquired or at least merged with larger media properties as we continue to grow. I suspect, and I don't know the first thing about the money side of this thing, but having properly documented financials is really going to grease the skids when we start having those conversations. So even small and medium-sized businesses have a need for this type of function, I would suppose.
Absolutely. And not only having proper financial records, but proper internal controls in general throughout the organization. That's very important, too. We can't forget the day-to-day things that you do. Just like Tiffany, she didn't understand that the samples weren't free. Having someone take a look at some of those things, taking a look at some of the processes that you have in place. Bill talked about the assurance piece of work that we do, but our role as auditors are changing. So depending on the maturity level of an organization or an audit department, it's not all about coming in and seeing that you've done something wrong and pointing it out to you. That's not our role all the time. A lot of times, again, we see a lot that goes on in an organization. We've got a lot of very intelligent, smart people in the internal audit arena. They're very good at the consulting side. I mean, taking an objective look at what's going on. They're stepping away. They don't have any emotion to it. They can step away and look at it high level and come back with, well, maybe you didn't think about it. Here's a way to improve this process. So we're not always telling you what you did wrong. It's ways to improve your processes as well. We do, our days consist of a lot of that type of work as well.
I've been dying to ask a question.
Go ahead.
From ultimately a small business owner myself, at what point or is there an ideal time that somebody should start looking at consulting with an auditor, you know, for their business? Like, one thing that I've noticed was I feel like that I'm a very good advisor towards my clients and working with them. But sometimes, you know, it's hard being a business owner and managing a business and then also trying to assist your clients. And so I've started to bring a lot more assistance in. But is there an ideal size, transactional size, or where an auditor would really pay for itself?
Yes. One of my clients, I don't, by the way, volunteer my time all the time for the association, but one of my paid clients is the, and this is public record, is the City of Dunwoody. And the City of Dunwoody is only been 5 years old, but it is in their state charter that that they have an internal audit department. All of the new cities since Dunwoody, the state has put that in their charter. Whereas you take a city like Sandy Springs, which was a newish city, the state was not putting it in their charter at that time.
There are a bunch of renegades on that side of Roswell.
Oh, right? Yeah. But the key thing about a size of a city or a company, Dunwoody's about $22 million in revenue. They cannot necessarily afford a full-time internal auditor. So one of the services I provide is a less than full-time internal auditor, but still do 8 audits a year and go into different areas and just take, and this is what auditors do all the time, internal auditors, they take a segment of the business, whether that's purchasing, a municipal court, the police department,
right,
you name it. They just take that piece of the business and just do, in effect, a full scope audit.
Right, like a
on
deep
that
dive,
piece.
Right?
A deep dive. That's exactly what it is. Things that wouldn't otherwise get looked at from the 50,000
foot level. Right, like you could look at it superficially and might not really see what you want to see out of it.
Exactly.
Now, Connie, you mentioned that not only is your job to kind of be picky and look for troubled areas, but you're also kind of giving the leadership data so that they can make informed strategic decisions.
Absolutely.
Right? And that is there a path for internal auditors to eventually become like CFOs? Is that part of the process?
Absolutely. I think internal audit, it's a great training ground because, again, you get to see all parts of the organization. So you spend a few years gaining that knowledge. And when you're ready to step out, you not only do you have that internal controls background, is you've also got the knowledge of the business as well. So several companies here in the area actually have programs where you start in internal audit. And the goal is for you not to stay in internal audit. The goal is for you to spend a few years there and learn the organization, understand internal controls, and then to actually move out of that organization.
Into a more strategic
role? Into more strategic roles. They move into manager positions, controller positions, mm-hmm. Operational positions. As a matter of fact, when I first started, I actually started in a manager trainee program, and I spent time in the internal audit department. I had never thought about a career in internal audit when I was in school. I was studying accounting. That's what I was going to be. I was going to be a CPA. That was
it. That made sense at the time, right?
It made sense at the time. But once you start getting in there, I found out that I really enjoyed that aspect of the business. And I've been there ever since.
I would think that being that intimately involved in that kind of granular level of the company's books, that as you gain more overall business wisdom, being a strategic player makes perfect sense. Is that, you see that happening?
One of the things we're most proud of, and we're proud of a number of things, but one of them is our association with Kennesaw State University. Mm-hmm. And some years ago, maybe 6 or 8 years ago, the chief auditor at Coca-Cola Enterprises came to us and said, it just doesn't make sense that at LSU, which, by the way, is the worldwide leader in internal audit education.
Really?
You didn't know that?
No. New Orleans. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought? Baton Rouge. And she had to go to get entry-level people right out of school. That's where you went. So we developed a partnership with Kennesaw State University. And
the IIA?
The IIA, Atlanta.
Wow. So you're working together to kind of create this really robust program?
Yes, we are. And as we have been fortunate enough to make money on our big events, we have donated a sizable amount of money.
For
scholarships.
Wow.
And for training. The Kennesaw has run with that and, with our money, developed a new curriculum related to internal audit training. And there's a certificate known as the IAEP.
Of course it's called that.
Internal Audit Education Program. And when Kennesaw State issued their first two of those a year ago, those were the first two ever issued in the state of Georgia, and most recently issued 8 of those. Well, I'll tell you, those 10 people that got jobs, good jobs, in the Atlanta area, nobody had to go to Baton Rouge to, and we love the people.
And did they stay here in Georgia? Because that's important, too.
They stayed here in Georgia. Oh, yeah. And the profile of a Kennesaw State student is not the same as when I went to school back in the last century, where, you know, you go to school for 4 years and then you go out and get a job. The profile of the students at KSU includes people that are older than 22, and they may have a spouse, they may have children, they maybe have parents that also live in the neighborhood, maybe they went to the Cobb County schools or other places in Georgia. Well, they don't want to graduate and then have to relocate.
Right.
So by having them have a skill when they graduate that companies like UPS and Wendy's when it was here and others and all the big four accounting firms are now hiring out of this program at Kennesaw State, that gets the transition from college – to the work life a lot easier when it does not involve a move.
Right.
Further, what many people were doing in the state of Georgia were they would wait for the big four CPA firms to hire people right out of college, let them train them for 2 or 3 years, then they became entry-level internal auditors. Now, of all things, what a novel idea. The training is going on in college. Who would have thought?
Well, I think you're seeing more and more of that, where the colleges and industry are working together to create graduates that actually are skilled in what they need to be skilled at.
And also to encourage some of those students to stay in the area, we actually sponsor a student day at Kennesaw every year. We're in our, sixth or seventh year of doing that, where we get major companies in the area, not only the big four, but industry as well, to come out and meet some of these students from around the area and talk to them. They get a chance to interview, and like Bill said, they end up working and staying in the area. And that's a part of our mission. That's one of the things we wanted to do, was actually promote interest in the profession, and working with the colleges and universities is one of the ways we do
it. So is mentorship, is that a formal program in the group?
It's a continuous program. Uh-huh. And we do mentor people at our monthly meetings. We mentor them at the student day. We have something called the case competition, where we bring in 10 colleges and universities, three-person teams speaking on an internal audit subject, and all of those teams have a mentor. I, by the way, mentor my alma mater, Mercer.
So that, I mean, that's unique, though. I would think that here you are, like Connie, you were saying that you didn't start out as an internal auditor. But to have somebody, kind of a mentor that's been there, done that, to kind of help you guide your career, that's probably invaluable.
Absolutely. And since I've been a member of the Atlanta chapter, as Bill said, we are continuously mentoring individuals. And they're not all kids just getting ready to come out of school.
They could have had experience in the workforce, but maybe not exactly in this area.
Absolutely. Or they're changing jobs, or they're transitioning out of one job. Excuse me. I actually It's a story you want to hear. We had a member, she lost her job. We invited her to come to the meeting. We connected her with one of our more senior members. He mentored her. Mm-hmm. Through the meeting, she met some individuals. So it's a great networking opportunity. She found her next position as a result of attending one of the meetings. Now, we don't guarantee jobs. That's not what I'm saying here. But that's what we want to do, that interaction and that networking. That's what it's about for us. So you never know what's going to happen when you show up at one of those meetings.
Now, once again, the information about the conference, because it sounds like anybody that's in accounting or auditing should be at least poking around to get some more information to learn more about it.
Absolutely. We have a website. They can go to www.theatlantaconference.net. The entire program's laid out, our speakers, their topics, their backgrounds, our sponsors that are helping us put this on. All the information is out there. Or you can, you know, reach out to me or Bill
Now,
as well.
You want to share your company's information as well?
Right. I work for a firm called Experis Finance, and I can be reached at 404-245-0774. We are a professional services firm, and my focus happens to be risk advisory services with a heavy emphasis on internal audit.
Bill?
And I am the leader and only employee of Mulkey Accounting and Risk Consulting. I've been doing that for 6 years now, and I provide consulting services to the internal audit community, from small not-for-profits to Fortune 500 companies.
And the website?
The website is www.billmulcahy.com.
And Connie, did you give your website for Experis?
It's www. Let me make sure I don't. www.experis.com.
And then once again, the website for the IIA?
www.theiia.org/Atlanta. That's the website for the Atlanta chapter. I gave you the website for the actual conference previously.
Well, thank you all for being part of the show. It was very informative, and I really recommend that anybody that's in this industry come to the website, check it out, and attend the conference. Sounds like a must-attend conference for anybody.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you all for being part of the show. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next week on Results Matter Radio.
This has been a joint production of Burr and Foreman and Business Radio X. Burr and Foreman is a full-service law firm with offices across the Southeast. If results matter to you and you want them to matter to your law firm, please give Burr and Foreman a call at 404-685-4337. For more information and to find the right attorney for you, visit burr.com. That's B-U-R-R.com.